Hey friend, it's Sherry Gregory, and you're listening to Grit and Grace, the podcast that equips you to lose who you're not, love who you are, and live your one life well. This is the last of the episodes that we recorded way back in July 2023. Now, I've already shared with you how close I came to just deleting all of these files, and I am so glad that instead I reached out to a friend who told me about a podcasting coach who specializes in working with people like me. Now, my gut reaction, kind of around age 5, was, I don't need help, I can do it myself. To which a more mature part of me promptly replied, yeah, because that plan's been working so well for the last 14 months, right? So that's when I asked the question, what do I stand to lose? And I signed up for coaching. Fast forward a few sessions with my new podcasting coach, and suddenly we were in the midst of a stealth relaunch of Grit and Grace, the podcast, that surprised even me. So here are a few of the answers I've found to the question, what do I stand to lose? When you get help from a coach who gets you, you stand to lose confusion, rumination, ignorance, all or nothing thinking, guilt, black and white thinking, rigidity, embarrassment, blinders, shame, tunnel vision, self-limiting beliefs, fatalistic self-talk, fear, and your inner critic. And when you lose even a few off of this list, it's amazing how quickly you can get unstuck and get going again. Well, in this week's episode, Amy and I discuss several ways we've gotten unstuck as we process together what we learned from our interview with Kathy Lipp. All right, Amy. I don't know which we like better, interviews or convos. Maybe it's a tie. But
no, I mean, because our interviews this time, Kathy and Michelle.
I know.
I mean, yes. But then this was so great, too, because I have a million thoughts running around as Kathy's talking to us. So now we get to talk about that.
Excellent.
Here we go.
Excellent. All right. Sounds good. So, all right. Is there anything off the top of your head that you just are dying to, like, let out first?
No, I mean, like, just more gushing. Honestly, like, the photographs in this book are giving me life. You know, I'm such a visual person.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just sat there and I looked at them, and I made Barry look at them with me last night, too. But the beautiful chicken pictures and then all the happy pictures of Kathy and Roger. The best. Best.
Well, and you know what's fun for me is that Daniel and I went to San Jose and actually had dinner with Kathy and Roger right after they had put a bid on a house and then somebody else had bought it, and they were really sad. But then they came back from going out and looking again, and they wanted to show us pictures of this red house that they had found that had a lot more acreage. And where we were at, they couldn't quite get cell service. So Kathy had like 100 photos she wanted to show, but they kept doing the spinning beach ball thing. And finally, like, one picture finally surfaced, and Daniel and I both gasped. And, you know, it was just such an iconic. I looked at her. I said, that house is a brand. I said, that is the one. And the first time, I'll never forget.
Red house.
Yes. The red house. It's amazing. So, you know, all those pictures, I've been there. And it is even more beautiful and more peaceful than the pictures make it look.
Well, I started scheming as we were talking.
Excellent.
Because I've got a speaking event in March in Washington State.
Well, girlfriend.
And I'm thinking all of us need to meet at Kathy's house at least for
dinner.
Or bring dinner or something. I don't know. But anyway.
Okay, so we should use this episode to make plans, and then we will inform Kathy about them and let her know what's happening. I love this idea.
The amazing thing is we know Kathy would be not only okay with that, she would actually be excited about it. She's the hostess with the mostest, me not so much, but yeah, have to have a plan ahead of time.
I love this plan. Well, one of the things that really hit me is, and I didn't realize it until I was listening to her. I mean, I'm not a homemaker, let alone a homesteader. Okay. Like, my mother was a home ec major. She loved, I think I've told you before, like, when she passed, we found her senior scrapbook of all of her home ec things. And there's this whole section on how to stage a corner. And I remember staring at that for like 10 minutes, like, what is this even about? Why would anyone spend time staging a corner? So like, this is just not me, okay? But I realized, and Kathy and I have talked a little bit about this, she's had some real trickle-down inspiration to me that I'm just now realizing I need to call her up and thank her for. Because with all the renovation at the house, and you heard me complain about the mess and the dust and everything, but it was a great opportunity for us to reevaluate space, time, energy, and money. And since we had to do a lot of moving things from one room to another, it just made sense to evaluate before putting them back or that sort of thing. And so I made two really big decisions that I don't know if I've talked to you or our friends who are listening about, but I made two big decisions, and I've now labeled them as decisions that this obstinate, headstrong girl made.
Yes, let's hear it for all the obstinate, headstrong girls.
And they both have to do with space, okay? And so the first one was that I will no longer store anybody else's stuff in my space.
Oh, yes, girl.
And this goes back to the fact that, and I won't go into the details, but for like over a decade, I stored Anne Marie's bedroom furniture in my office. And because somebody might need it someday, right? And it was not useful in any way, shape, or form. Like, it could not be modified. I had to literally work around it. And then there was also a blue silk chair that my aunt had given us. And it was probably a very nice chair in its day. But I'm just going to delicately say it had accumulated cat stains. And it was no longer a nice chair. And it made my office a not nice place to be. And so I finally, a number of months ago, gained the courage, or maybe I just channeled that Lizzie Bennett, that obstinate, headstrong girl, and without telling anybody or asking anybody what they thought, and knowing that it was not going to be popular, I stuffed a bunch of, well, first of all, I gave away all the bedroom furniture to somebody on the Nextdoor app over a year ago. But then there was just a bunch of other stuff that I actually took to the dump. And that took me time. It even took money. Like, it's not fun to pay, but oh my goodness, I got rid of the chair. And there were just other things that were in the garage that were cluttery and that sort of thing. And I came home, and Amy, it felt so good. It felt so good to be rid of that stuff and not to be thinking, waste not, want not. We might need this someday. We could reupholster that, you know, all that kind of thinking. And it went against so much of the grain. I know you and I have talked about coming from teachers' families, you know, budget is always seems to be the thing that rises to the top. And so to prioritize space, to go ahead and use some money, to use some energy, to use up some time, to free up space, that's kind of a new thing for me to think about. And then I did it again. And so this is my second new rule in my life. And that is, I could fix that now has a shelf life of 30 days. Because there's an unnamed person in my life who for years, in fact, pretty soon it'll be 35 years, would always say, oh, keep that. I could fix that. Keep that. I could fix that. And my brain went, okay, I could fix that means I will fix it soon. It meant nothing of the sort. It turns out it meant I could fix that. So you should keep it until I have time. And in all these years, there has been no time. And since you go back to rule number one, I am no longer storing other people's stuff in my space. All the shelves of I could fix that things are gone. I recycled them. I took them to donation centers where people actually will fix them. And it was not a popular choice for me to make. But you know what? There's been a great deal of relief. And I think it's felt by everybody. I think the pressure of things that could be fixed when there's not enough time to actually do it, actually by clearing up the space. And I'm just realizing this as I'm saying it, I think it took some of the time pressure off because as long as they were sitting there like mocking, like you should be able to fix me, you know, you have the capability. So why aren't you doing it? And now somebody else can handle them and we don't have to think about them anymore.
Well, here's how I'm processing it. I think what we have to ask ourselves about our resources is this a resource? Or is this a weight?
Oh, that's so good.
Or maybe is it an anchor? You know what I mean? Like dead weight.
A millstone.
Right.
An albatross.
Right. Yes. Right. And you know, I kind of swing to the other direction to a fault. I am a declutterer to the point. I'm not very sentimental. I know I have a person that I love in my life, a family member, who keeps a lot because she's very sentimental. Mm. And these things mean something to her. My people mean everything to me, but stuff does not mean much to me. And different people are different on that. So no shade towards people that are sentimental about things. But my boys came home from college one time and they're like, "Where's the Lord of the Rings trilogy, Mom?" And I said, "Goodwill."
You didn't? Oh, my God. Like,
I said, "It's been in that drawer for years and years. I literally gave it away like a month ago. And also, you can stream that." But it was in my...
Yep.
I do have a little regret about that. So now I'm better about at least asking the people that actually care about these things if they would like to take them into their space whether I could pass them on to Goodwill for them.
Yes. And that was my deciding factor when I realized that the person who wanted me to keep the blue chair that had cat stains on it, that person has 5 separate offices, 1 in the house, 1 at the church, and 3 at the school, and did not want to take the chair and store it in any of those offices. And I was like, you know what? I think it's okay for me to make decisions about my space. And so, you know,
it's not a resource. That is a weight.
That's right. It was a weight. It was an albatross. It was a stinky albatross. And so now what I've been able to do, and you know what? I don't know if I can do it. Let me pause real quickly.
You know what? This is a good question, though. We can extend that. So we're talking about space. But we could also extend that to time.
Yes.
Is this a resource or a weight? Is this a calling or a burden, an obligation? Mm-hmm. How about our energy? Is this a resource or is this a weight? Is this a drain on my energy?
Yes.
Or something needless? Our money. Is this a resource or is this a weight? Do I own my stuff or does it own me?
Preach.
Right. I mean, it could be extended to all of that.
I love it. So what I've done here for our friends who are listening is Amy can now see what I've done with my space. But I brought all my books in here. I set it up as a library. I'm not done yet. Those post-it notes are all my categories. I even got an app on my phone. I scanned the barcodes. I now know every book I have. I know where it is. I found 12 duplicates, books I had bought because I couldn't find the first copy I had.
And resources so, you can share.
Exactly. I'm going to be sharing. But here's the thing, okay? For some people, they don't ever want to own physical books, let alone put them on shelves. There are no words for how happy this makes me. There are no words for how much I love being in my, not just office, but in my personal library and knowing where my books are and being able to grab them. And by the way, there's a shelf. I'm going to be putting a little label. It says books by my friends. And I have your books there.
Oh, thank you. Gosh, that makes me feel good. Well, and Sherry, I know you and your books will be a resource. I mean, on the regular, when we're talking personal things, you'll pull a book out or pull a quote out from a book. Really, really helps me. And so those things for you are a resource. Is an interesting observation, though, because what is a resource for one person might be a weight for someone else.
Yes.
So we don't get judgy about the way these resources
flow. I love how you're
turning
this into a principle. And yes, my example here is not that, everybody should, you know, declutter so they can put up their books. My books give me the kind of joy that Kathy's beautiful hand-painted tiles in her kitchen and her chickens give her. And giving myself permission to get rid of the things that were in the way, to reallocate the space away from cluttery things that were based on somebody else's values and use the space in a way that expressed my values. That was the key thing here.
And I just see the overflow in both of those, that literally you're going to share and resource quotes. Kathy is going to share eggs and she's going to have meals for people in that beautiful kitchen. You know, I love that. It's beautiful.
All righty. So Kathy also talked about learning self-grace and mutual grace and then also community grace. And that piece of community grace really touched on something for you. Talk about that.
Really did. She said something that I thought was mind-blowing. She said that this community grace that she has developed, that she lives with people who believe and see the world differently than she does. And yet she is building this foundation of love. You can hear it in the way that she talks about people. And she said that these relationships have literally saved her life. Like, we know that this neighbor dug her out of the snow. They were trapped in their house for how long, Sherry? We didn't get to, like,
days with no power whatsoever and snowmageddon coming down on them.
Yes. I mean, it was crazy. And he got them out. And she said he's the firefighter who saved their house. But it reminded me of years ago, and I've written about my friend Linda in all my books, and her husband is coming to visit us soon, and her boys. But my friend Linda, who died when our littles were three, and she said to me one time, Amy, everyone should be given 6 months to live. And what she meant was, you know, every minute of every day had purpose and meaning for her, and she lived so intentionally. But what if we use that idea for community grace too? What if we all saw living with people who believe and see the world differently than us as a life-saving necessity? Because it really is. I mean, all the science that we can tap into says that people are healthier and live longer. So it is life-saving, literally, to live in community. And church is high up in that, in those statistics. And so a faith community is so important. And so many of us are struggling with church. And yet it's worth the struggle to see that this community grace that we are trying to establish maybe is for us too. It is a life saving necessity in every single way. God made us for it. And it was just, you know, we were reading in the news of this big shift that's happening. The blue people are moving to the blue states and the red people are moving to the red states. And there's more and more division and physical even separateness. And what if we start to reverse that in our own communities? And we see it as for our community, but also for our own souls. I just thought it was profound.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Well, and, you know, just I think you and I can both agree from our own personal experience that when, well, I'll just speak for myself. When I'm with people who agree with me, it feels good in the moment.
Yes.
But I can become that echo chamber. I can become so used to not being challenged. I can be so used to everybody being so like-minded that I become a narrower and narrower, narrower version of myself rather than somebody who is being challenged to ask more questions and listen better and think new thoughts and see things from other perspectives.
Learn and grow. Yes.
Exactly. Exactly. And it's not necessarily that I'm going to suddenly change my mind or join the other side, which isn't even the point. The point is to recognize that life is complex. And there are many extraordinarily valid perspectives. And when, I mean, I'll admit, it's been easy to just kind of hide for the last few years and kind of put my head down and just kind of stay where I'm comfortable. And, you know, I am finding God really pushing me out of my comfort zone in ways that are really, really healthy to expand my comfort zone, to expand that sense of community grace, because it's going to be good for everybody.
I just thought it was profound. Yeah. I love all three of these. How about you with self-grace?
You know, self-grace has been such a huge thing for me for the last year. I call it self-compassion. But it has just been mind-blowing. And we always talk about grace being a gift. It's a gift. It's a gift. It's a gift. I think I thought self-compassion was something, since it had the word self to it, it takes at least some effort on my part. And I'm becoming even more aware that even the ability to have compassion for myself is a gift. God's grace is a gift, and the ability to receive it and apply it to myself is a gift. It just does not come naturally, especially to those of us who have some reforming perfectionism and legalism in us. So, and then I love the way that she expressed that mutual grace about, you know, if she and Roger might be exhausted at the same time. And she said, I see couples turn on each other in such circumstances There was this really short Brené Brown clip that made the rounds. Did you see it where she was talking about that marriage isn't 50-50? I'll put it in the show notes.
I have seen it, I think.
Okay.
But tell us about it.
Yeah. She said, basically, she says it's important for couples to communicate where they're actually at instead of this ideal that no, marriage isn't 50-50. It's 100-100. Okay, whatever. You know, these are lovely things we put on cards that we teach in marriage seminars. But in real life, what she was saying is at the end of the day, she and her husband report in. And one of them might be saying, look, I'm at 20% today. And that's in terms of energy, kindness, patience, whatever. And if they're kind of in a reasonably healthy space, the other spouse might say, well, I'm at 80, so I'll cover you today. And that alone has so much grace to it. The recognition that one person, I mean, that's biblical, right? If one person falls down, the other is there to lift them up. But then she said there are times, and she said in this case, her mother had been ill, where they're both at low ebb. And so she reported in that she was at 10% and her husband was at a solid 25. Well, that's nowhere near 100. But this is what really got me. She said, anytime we're less than 100, we sit down and make a plan of kindness. When both of you just have 20, you have to make a plan not to hurt each other. Ooh, and I was like, so where good. Was that in the marriage counseling? You know, when we were so starry-eyed thinking everything's going to work, it's going to be 100-100 or at least 50-50. But the idea that, hey, when we check in and realistically assess that we are both way low, number one priority is how are we going to not hurt each other? How are we going to make that plan for kindness? So that just, Kathy saying that she sees couples turn on each other when both people are low on energy really made me think of that.
That's beautiful. And I think that as people of faith, we can also say this is where God's Spirit
yes.
flows in to fill the gaps yeah. and also empowers us mm-hmm. to be better. I'll just say it about me. Empowers me to be better than I generally would be at 15%. Yeah. Not yeah. so awesome at 15%.
Yeah.
And Barry and I have been seeing a lot of this. His job is really hard right now. And, you know, I've been just really actually wallowing in some things. And I was sitting in my feelings, but I realized yesterday I've moved into wallowing and I've got a plan to get out of that. But I said to Barry one day, I was like, I just am so actually needy right now. When he just died laughing, he goes, you are the most independent, needy person I've ever met in my life. But, you know, which was great. But, and he's right. However, is it because there's this push and pull with me? Like, I had to confess that I was needy mm-hmm. because I was like, babe, whereas usually I'm independent and I'm like, nah, I can do this myself, mm-hmm. like a 3-year-old. That's yeah. kind of been my mantra my whole life. I'm like, no, I actually need you just to be really tiptoe around me a little bit. Mm. I feel really easy to shatter at the moment. Mm. But that goes back where I'm at today. I had a little turning point yesterday. And I thought, I have gone from sitting in my feelings to wallowing in them. And I have to do some things to get out. And this is where some self-grace is coming in, which is, I need to get out and leverage the endorphins that God gave me. Mm. And so I set my alarm. I walked yesterday and today because walking, being mm-hmm. outside, it brings mm-hmm. me joy. But then we know mm-hmm. physically it does good things for us. So some of the self-grace is intentionally doing things, listening to some worship music, taking my vitamin D, mm-hmm. getting my checkup because I know my thyroid's out of whack. Mm. I mean, so all of these are tied together, right? Because then the community yeah. grace is my doctors are going to help me out.
Yep.
And, you know, so none of these is a standalone. We all need all three: self-grace, mutual grace, and community grace. It was just so beautifully said.
I love how you integrated them all. Love that. Well, and then in her wrap-up, Kathy gave us this rousing speech on educating ourselves and, you know, pointed out that for so long, women especially were denied education. And now, like, there's almost nothing that we can't learn to do, whether it's a large topic that we learn with our head or it's something we learn how to do with our hands by, you know, we had the time change not too long ago. And every time there's a YouTube video that I look up, so I know how to change the clock on my little 2009 Honda Civic because I can't remember it. But in 1 minute and 29 seconds, I'm reminded. So you had some thoughts about this whole moving forward with educating, especially maybe for those of us who are no longer spring chicks?
Yeah, that's true. And I love how Kathy, it was funny, she talked about her friends that are so highly educated. And we know Susie is working in seminary. And I have a friend that's actually in school with Susie and she's learning all the wonderful things. And that's amazing. But then she also included you too. Well, that's a full spectrum if you've ever heard it. And I just love this. I've always loved the idea. You and I are both former teachers. And I made a commitment early on, partially because I love it and partially because I think it's good to be a lifetime learner. And I hinted in the conversation with Kathy that I'm on this new adventure and I'm learning about real estate. And I'll share that more about that over time. But this is something I have never done before. And yesterday I had the thought, like, why am I doing this again? You know, I remember when Breaking Up with Perfect came out and the learning curve of my first book, I thought it really almost killed me. It almost killed me. I was like, and here I am doing a brand new thing that I know nothing about. Again, why would I do this to myself? And I'd say the primary reason is a sense of calling to it. Also, there is this love of learning. And I am finding that learning something new, and maybe our listeners, our friends can really relate to this, is energizing. It really is energizing me to do something new. Now, it can exhaust me, but I'm learning that trusting God in what I don't know, and this like self-grace that I'm a beginner and I will be better, like Kathy said,
exactly.
That growth mindset
in
our education is so, so important. Okay, you're like the education girl. Talk to us about education.
Well, you know, this is where obstinate, headstrong girl comes in again, the stubborn, like, I've been in school as long as you've known me, and I'm still not done with this degree.
It's called perseverance. Yes.
Well, you know, and it comes back to me realizing that resilience is not what I used to think it was. I used to think resilient people were those who could bounce back super fast and that they were like the weebles who wobble and don't fall down, but boom, they're right back up again. And I think the thing I'm starting to really value is, you know, Kathy even alluded to those of us who start things and don't finish them. You know, one of the things I'm realizing about myself is I get to about the 90% mark of things and I'm tired, I'm depleted, and I pause to rest. And then I just don't get going again because other things happen, or I don't recognize that I need a team, that it's going to take me more than just me bucking up and sucking up buttercup and, you know, somehow forcing myself. That last 10% is often the steepest part. This is one of the things I'm learning about myself this year is I need to keep iterating. I need to keep coming back and coming back and coming back. My old habit of stopping and then waiting till a good time to finish it all at once is, it doesn't work. It's never worked well. But if I can come moving the playing piece on the game board forward just one bit at a time, don't be all or nothing. It's the just keep it in front of me. And then for me, making sure that I'm leaving myself enough notes. I've always been one who, if I put something away for too long, then getting started again feels like I'm starting over from scratch. And it's not true. Once I'm into it, I really can regain the momentum. But leaving myself notes, leaving myself even questions, and I'll leave myself a checklist next time I pick this up. And I leave myself just a few little reminders and then what my next few steps are. And I'm very clear. I don't leave myself code. I like spell it out in words that future me will understand and it won't rely on any memory cells functioning. But then the process of doing those things will bring me back up to speed. And then also, I've got several coaches I'm working with through my program. I've got my methodologist, and we meet every week. And I've got a leadership and learning coach that I meet with every week. And Amy Carroll, I cannot tell you how badly I want to cancel almost every single week because I feel like I haven't made enough progress. And what I'm learning is even meeting with them for 10 or 15 minutes to discuss why I haven't made the progress or what I was hoping to do or what the obstacle is, almost always turns into some notes that actually produce forward momentum. And so this idea of lifelong learning, part of it is knowing how we learn best and maybe revisiting what have been some of the obstacles in the past, because my mother was very much, you're always starting and never finishing. And to be truthful, some of the things I started weren't worth finishing. Like I tried just enough to discover, nope, not interested in that one. But for this one's worth finishing. And it's
so
worth
good.
Discovering my learning style, whether it's always been my learning style or this is my learning style at this stage of life. And then having the team to help keep me going, and the accountability of these incremental appointments makes a big difference.
Fantastic. Yeah. Having a deadline and somebody else who is holding that deadline mm-hmm. always helps me along too.
Mm-hmm.
So really good thoughts about learning something new. I particularly like the idea of writing the notes to 2024, Sherry.
Yep.
For a date it is in the future to write notes for yourself when you, because inevitably something will come up where you have to take a break.
Yep.
And then come back to it.
Yep.
Fantastic. Yep.
Taking good care of our future self. So what we've discussed here doesn't really have anything to do with homesteading, but I think we have taken some of the principles that Kathy gave us and applied them to the various, in my case, I kind of look back at, hang on a second, I have this office up the way I like because I have been following the same principles that Kathy has. She at her red house homesteading, me here getting rid of stuff. And setting up an office that serves me well and brings me joy. And you are off on this adventure. Is there anything, Kathy, I know you don't want to share any particular details yet of this new adventure you're on, but was there anything that she said or anything from the book that you're finding is kind of giving you a little boost in this new adventure that you're on?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that has really encouraged me just about the book and the conversation is Kathy talks a lot about age. Mm. And, you know, I think we're in our mid-50s, heading toward our late 50s. And there is something, our culture is youth-driven. Mm. And I think it's hard to fight against that mindset of over the hill, irrelevant. Mm. Too late, all of those messages that our culture actually speaks very loudly to people our age, and to say, nope, I'm still doing new things. And God is going to have me on an adventure with him until I die. Mm. And so let's go. Let's do this. Let's not use age as an excuse. And it was great because I have a coach helping me too. And I said, oh, I'm starting so late. You know, I'm 56. And she told me a story about a woman in her 80s that started on this same adventure. And she's like, she's doing so great. She's killing it. And I'm like, okay, come on, Amy Carroll, you can do this. And so just the idea of it's never too late. We are not too old to learn and implement new ideas and do new things.
You know, and that's super encouraging to me because there's a part of me that's embarrassed that I'm still not done with my degree because I wanted it done by 50. Like that was it, 50. And I'm, like you said, I don't know why you had to say that we're pushing the late 50s, but okay, speak for yourself there. But, and so there's a part of me that's like, you know, I don't want to, when it gets done, I'll just hang the plaque on the wall and just be glad, you know, finally finished. And yet I know from experience that every year since then, I have learned things I needed to learn, and those are being wrapped into the overall program. And I don't want to say I have no regrets, but like it's artificial for me to be like, oh, it would have been so much better if I'd been done by 50. Why?
Nothing wasted.
Nothing wasted. Thank you. Nothing wasted.
Much gained by perseverance.
Yeah. I love the idea that it's never too late. It's never too
late
to start.
We're going to have a big party. I mean, we're just going to schedule a big party.
Well, I love, you said it's never too late to start. And I want, so let's make this our kind of our closing thing for our friends who are listening. It's never too late to start and it's never too late to finish.
Amen.
We hope you've enjoyed episode number 275 of Grit and Grace, the podcast. Check out the webpage for this week's episode at gritandgracethepodcast.com/episode275. There you'll find a transcript along with information about the coaching options I offer, highly sensitive persons and writers who are HSPs, to help them get unstuck so they can start something new or finally get something finished up. And be sure to tune in next week for a brand new Catch Up Convo
that Amy and I recorded just a few weeks ago. For today, grow your grit. Embrace God's grace. Keep asking yourself, is this a resource or a weight? And reminding yourself, it's never too late.